Oh, there we go. Okay. All right. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Verifiable Credentials for Education Task Force call. This is Monday, October 3rd. Today we have Naomi from Velocity Foundation, who's going to be presenting about work that is going on there. So a few things to start with. We always start with the IP note. Keep in mind that if you are doing any work on the standards or any documentation, you must be a contributor to, you must be a member of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. This information goes out with the agenda, so you can look there for that information, how to join and how to sign up for W3C, and then also how to join the community group. Secondly, call notes. As you all just heard, this, all of our calls are recorded, and the minutes are archived and published. We may also have a video of some of these calls. And all of these get posted and archived at this link right here, in case you want to check for meeting archives. Keep in mind that all of the CCG calls get listed there at the meeting archives. We use a queue system for these calls, so if you are wanting to ask a question or make a comment or in a moment introduce yourself or reintroduce yourself, please use Q+. To put yourself in the queue like I just did, or Q- to take yourself up. Okay, next, why don't we start with some introductions and reintroductions. Is there anybody that's new to the call today that would like to introduce themselves? Or folks who've been coming here for a while and have something new to tell us about, or new roles or anything like that. Okay, why don't we move on to to announcements and reminders. Excuse me, if you have something to add to this or, change your mind and want to do any reintroductions, just add yourself to the queue. I have quite a few of announcements and reminders today, so hang on for this. One is that PlugFest 2 is currently going on. This is a link to the website. The objective of PlugFest 2 is exchange credentials between issuers and wallets using the API standards. And this Friday, October 7th, is the deadline to choose partners. And what we're doing is forming partnerships between issuers and wallets. And this is two issuers that can post to a wallet or a wallet that can accept from two issuers. And I say it that way because we have both issuers and wallets participating, obviously. So that is pretty great. That's going on right now. And then also to stay in the loop on events like this or anything else going on in BCEDU to learn what we're working on. If you aren't already on the mailing list, please join. I'm going to put instructions for the mailing list in the chat right here for you. And also another note is that all emails are also archived, or you can choose to when you sign up, actually. But most emails and conversations are archived, so that we have this documentation to reference later. Okay, next, one notable change about CCG meetings and events. Actually, this is the link to all upcoming CCG meetings and events. But a notable change is that the VCAPI call is now an hour earlier on Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern instead of 4 p.m. Eastern. Okay, next is that registration is still open for the Internet Identity Workshop. It's being held at the Computer History Museum in Mountain View on November 15th and 17th. And here's information there about that. This is like an absolutely excellent event. It's run as an unconference, so the attendees decide the agenda. Last year we had a session about VCEDU, or last spring we had a session about VCEDU. And this year we're already talking about how we want to discuss more about governance, training credentials, and things like that. Okay, I don't see anybody in the queue, but does anybody have anything to add to that? If so, can you add yourselves to the queue? Okay. Then why don't we just get going with our main topic today? we often talk about education in this space, right? But we know that this task force also has a scope of achievements and also employment. And so I'd like to introduce Naomi Sekresh, who is here to tell us about how Velocity Network Foundation is working on verifiable interested career credentials. I'll be keeping an eye on the queue if anybody queues up any questions, and Naomi has said that she's fine with being interrupted. Naomi, how about if I hand it over to you?
Hi there. Thanks, Carrie, for the introduction. And actually, I do have a colleague on the line, Moshet Sivi. Moshet Sivi, if you could just come online and introduce yourself and say a quick hello. He is our technical counterpart on the ecosystem team, and he's here to help. Great, great, great. He's here to help answer, you know, some of the questions that this particular group may have about Velocity, since I, as I'm going to share in a second, am one of the newest members to the team. And my role is more on the outreach side of things and the business side of things. So it's nice to meet everyone. And in a moment, I'll share my screen and I'll also pop into the chat a deck that we'll be going through today. And we'll be introducing you to Velocity Network Foundation and some of the work that we've done to date, some of the most new developments and so forth, and providing that overview perspective and then also allowing for some question and answer in a moment. So I'm going to pop in the chat because I understand some people like to see the slides as they move along, a PDF version that I just set up, doing that now. And hopefully that will work. If someone can just test that link and let us know if that works for them. And then I'll share my screen and let me know that you can see my screen as we go through.
I can open the PDF.
Great. Perfect. Thank you.
And I can see your slides too. So we're
just okay, great. Great. Thanks. Awesome. So as I mentioned, hello, my name is Naomi, and I actually know a number of you from other contexts. I've been involved in this space for a little bit, having done some work with T3 and OSN and Public Consulting Group prior to joining Velocity more recently. And we're excited because Velocity had been brewing and working on a number of things prior to this date. It's really an honor to present to this group and also to present on behalf of Velocity that, you know, it's really coming to a head now, where the network went live in the spring. They did a big general assembly in the summer, and we'll show you a little bit about some of the work that we've done. And so it's kind of like open for business, and we have a number of partners and members busy integrating and working with the infrastructure. So we're really excited to be at this point and introducing our work to you today. So what we'll cover is a little bit of the overview of Velocity, some news and updates, and then we can do a little bit of a tech deeper dive. Moshet Sivi will help me answer some questions, and anything we can't answer, we will absolutely be willing to get back to this group on. So in terms of Velocity basics, I tweak this a little bit for this group, just in the sense that I feel like we do have a shared objective to create this future where career records are verifiable digital credentials owned and stored by the individual. And owned and stored by the individual might be a difference for some. Velocity definitely takes the point of view that SSI is important. So individuals, you know, the vision is individuals will hold verifiable immutable career records on digital wallets, be able to share them instantly with employers and other labor market stakeholders to better access career opportunities. And so, you know, with some of our introductions that we do, folks are less familiar with this vision, this goal, this objective, this future scenario. We understand this group to be pretty well steeped in this background. So then diving in, you know, one of the things that Velocity Network Foundation was really steeped around is one, its background in HR tech, that some of the founders had done extensive work in HR tech, space and also had done some, you know, work with incubating different ideas. And they really felt like there needed to be a big idea to pull this together and really get this off the ground, where they realized that we were up against the cold start problem, and how do we get, you know, the world basically transformed to a different way of thinking about credentials. And so the way Velocity got started and got traction and really approaches the adoption problem is that if we can think of it less as we have to go out to each individual employer and get them on board with verifiable credentials and this future digitized way of verifying employment and career records. If we can, instead of going to each individual employer, work through our HR tech providers that have already basically amassed all these organizations, we will have a critical mass of participation and we'll be able to jumpstart the ecosystem and get it moving forward. So if you see here on the right, we've got a number of the original founding members listed here, and you see some really known quantities like SAP and so forth in the mix, and Kelly. And, you know, the idea was that we'd be able to go to our background check providers, to our HRIS systems, and if we can get them on board, then that's a significant volume of transactions that will be processed. So Velocity Network provides this open, public, decentralized utility layer to transform the one-way career record credential system of old into this future state. And 30% or more of large employers use one or more of the participating organizations in the Velocity Network, and 1 billion individuals have career records processed by the participating organizations. So that was really this idea of getting a critical mass together. But in terms of what Velocity Data is itself, is we think that this slide kind of shows it best, where it's Velocity is about providing that underlying infrastructure for this global labor market. And let me pause there and back up. And when Velocity talks about career records, they do mean work, employment, and education. You know, just in the Velocity language, they consider that all a part of someone's career, your educational career, your work career. And so it's to enable all these transactions by partnering, not competing with the current players. So you may have seen, for example, the Velocity Career Wallet, but that's really, it's in existence as a reference example, or if someone doesn't have a wallet to use. But the idea is that all wallets and all credential issuers can come onto Velocity and enable their transactions to have that global reach, and that it's not limited to one type of credential or another, that it can be this this utility layer for a broad variety of credentials to reach their end goals, and for individuals to then be able to curate their credentials and use them effectively in the future. So Velocity is that infrastructure layer, and then it solves for some of our interoperability problems. And it Velocity, when they really got together and started to go through this, you know, the problems of interoperability, they broke it out into more layers than I think we typically talk about, where technical interoperability is almost like one of the most simple, like, can you talk from one system to another? And Velocity has solved that through its APIs and SDK. And actually, Moshe Tzvi may be able to speak more in detail about some of those pieces if you have questions about it. In terms of structural interoperability, that's your schemas, your syntax, and organization of the data to exchange. Velocity basically, in their standards committee, took and simplified, you know, what is the simplest amount of data that has to flow across the, to basically be present to enable credential to flow across the network. And so Velocity is designed to enable not just, verifiable credentials, badges, CLRs, you know, even other digital records. It's really designed to enable all of those different types of credentials to come across the network rather than being limited to just one type or another. In terms of semantic interoperability, the way Velocity solves for this is by providing for linked open data. So that's your credential engine and your information on when you've got a credential, what does it actually mean? Velocity said this is a much bigger problem than we are designed to solve. What we want to do is enable the experts that are solving those problems to basically participate in our network through linked open data, so that when a credential is received and someone is verifying it, they can reach back to find out more about it and how that plays into and what that credential actually has meaning. In terms of the next layer of interoperability, layer four, is considered legal interoperability. So that's all the governance, policy, legal considerations that need to be solved in order for the network to work and be successful in multiple markets globally. And so Velocity does have committees that work on these interoperability issues and work on the legal regulations and so forth to make sure that the network is compliant. And participants do have to sign an agreement to be able to send information across the network. The last one is business process interoperability. And again, the committee structure in Velocity does work on the issue of enabling for the most possible use cases so that one organization or another is not boxed out of participation on this network. And so again, the idea is that Velocity is a tool for wallet providers, issuers, et cetera, and it partners with current players. It's not trying to be a wallet or be an issuer in its own right. And so that's one really important clarifying point about Velocity Network. I want to pause there. Are there any questions that are coming up? Because usually these, at this point, people have a few questions in their minds.
Naomi, we don't have any in the queue yet, but I have a question.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you could tell us more about the standards that you're using to communicate within the network, and then also a little bit more about how you're planning on communicating to wallets outside of the network and maybe for participants to like export their data. So maybe we could dig into some of the technical discussions right now.
Okay. Yep. Well, I'd like to scurry along and then maybe we can dig into those questions a little bit in a couple slides. One thing is, Moshe Tzvi, are you poised to talk about a couple of those things? The third one, I'd like to kind of nip in the bud about like how an individual communicates their data. You know, that would be a function of the individual wallets, that not necessarily as a function of Velocity's network per se, to some extent. And so, Moshe Tzvi, did you track those questions? And then I can kind of scurry along, and then we could probably give you some space to talk to those.
Sure. Yeah, let me know when you're ready. Happy to
Okay, cool.
That sounds okay. Great. Thank you.
So then one just like general background thing, and this is why I want to just keep this in context connected to what I just shared, is that we do have a governance process. There is a board that runs Velocity Network Foundation, and this is one of the features that this is an example of our board now, and this is an example of the distributed governance that and the role of members of Velocity. And it's important to clarify that in terms of the exchanges that Velocity enables, anyone can participate on the network. It's open, it's free, all the documentation is online. The difference is that members are the only ones that participate in governance and can run a node. Velocity, as I did not get to mention yet, is a blockchain-enabled distributed ledger where the only information that's stored on chain is for the verification of the keys. There's no PII stored on chain. With that, I thought that this might be a meaningful moment and slide to have up when, you know, Moshe Tzvi, if you want to dig in and answer some of those questions and points that Kerry raised.
Sure, no problem. So I guess in no particular order, the question about how could other wallets interact with the network. So and it really goes back to the defined protocols. As Naomi mentioned, the foundation is who decides kind of what the protocols are. Those protocols are public, published on our website. Even the existing Velocity wallet that that Naomi mentioned as a placeholder, it's open source, and any organization that would like to implement their own wallet as opposed to starting from scratch is welcome to become a part of the network and take that open source code and turn it into whatever they need. The wallet is based on defined protocols for sharing the credentials and receiving them from issuers and sharing them with inspectors, and any wallet that chooses to implement those protocols would inherently be able to therefore receive issued credentials that are issued as part of the Velocity network, and would also be able to inspect or send that wallet would then be able to send those credentials to inspection by any organization that implements the inspection protocols in the network. And so in that sense, it's completely open. I believe even on our website right now, we have a number of examples of different organizations that some of them have already implemented and some of them are in the process of implementing their own wallets that comply with those protocols. I think there's 6 or 7 that are up on the website at the moment. And so the wallets are really open to whoever is interested in participating in the network. If there's an existing wallet already that somebody has, so it's just a matter of adding those protocols to their wallet so that they can then interact with the Velocity credentials on the Velocity network as well. So I think that may have addressed both of your questions, both about sort of the wallet openness as well as the general interoperability because it's just publicly defined standards that as long as you're implementing that protocol, you can interface regardless of what piece of the process you want to be participating in.
Okay, thank you. I have two questions in the chat. One is from Tim. What blockchain networks are you connected to?
Yeah, so it's a good question. I want to clarify though, because there's something that I think is sometimes missed, and it's really important, especially in light of what Naomi clarified earlier. Individuals' personal information, their credential information, is not stored on the chain. The individual's information about their credentials is only theirs in their mobile wallet. There is no central database with everybody's information, nor is that information public on the blockchain, such that if I were to hack a blockchain node, I would be able to get access to people's personal information. People's personal information, their credentials, only exist in their mobile wallet. That is the entirety of where it exists. What happens to the chain is to solve a particular issue. So, and I'll just explain the issue just so we can understand what is stored on chain, which is if you're storing your personal credential information, what's to stop you from going into that credential file that's on your mobile device and changing some of the information there, right? Maybe you want to give yourself a degree from Harvard instead of Yale or whatever. And so in order to prevent that, when the credential is issued from the issuing institution, it is encrypted with public-private key encryption. And so what you have on your wallet then is an encrypted version of your credential, and the public key that unlocks that goes onto the blockchain. And that's what's out there. It's just a key, the specific, technical, blockchain that we're using. We're using Ethereum's blockchain implementation, to answer your question. And then on the flip side, when you share your, credential with a relying party, for it to be validated, they go to the blockchain, they get the public key, and only if you haven't tampered with the credential file that's on your device will that public key still match your credential file and allow it to be unlocked. And that's how we know you haven't tampered with it throughout the period of time that you were holding it. So the blockchain is used as part of the solution, but really as an ancillary piece to solve a tamper-proof problem, and it's not none of the core information is stored on the chain.
Thank you. Just a few, before I get to your question, Keith, I see you there too. Tim had a follow-up about tokens, and if any of the credentials are tokenized or if you're using any of that method.
So the credentials are not tokenized, right? They are stored on the in the wallet on individual's wallet.
Thank you.
If I may, real quick, Carrie, to support,
yeah.
Can you still see my screen?
I can. We can.
Okay, good. So one thing is to I was sharing before, and I think it dropped down, is the actual website. And for example, I was talking about the different schemas for the different types of credentials, and all of the documentation is posted on the website, and it really gives, you know, instant access to some of the SDKs and instructions for how to get started, so that any entity that wants to issue to Velocity Network or even build a wallet, as Moshe Tzvi had mentioned, the information is all posted on here, and it's just navigable by the through the Velocity website. So if this cooperates here, my internet cooperates, it doesn't seem to be. Basically, on the developers tab, you can click through to this kind of inventory of information.
That's great. Thank you. And on that page there, is there information about let's see how Phil ordered it, like the protocols supporting for the VC exchange, like VC API, OpenIDC, or OIDC, is that included as part of this list on this document?
I don't think that that level of information is included, only because Velocity encourage organizations to interact with Velocity using the SDK. However, you know, for example, for the PlugFest, we're making the move to the OIDC protocol. So that may be something that the team can add for the future.
Okay, great. Thanks. I'm going to go to Keith's question here. He's wondering if you could clarify more about the business model. We'll get back to the tech stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
His understanding is that verifiers need to pay to verify credentials.
So I can absolutely dig into that. And that was actually the next slide. Can you still see my screen and see the PowerPoint now?
Yeah, but you know what? Why don't we pause on that then? Because we had some technical questions still. So let's just stay here.
Okay.
We'll get back to you. Okay. Dimitri, you're in the queue.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to clarify. It sounded some of the things Moshe was saying, seem fairly exotic in the credential ecosystem. So I just wanted to clarify I understood right. So the question was, what prevents users from changing the credential? And typically in the verifiable credential ecosystem, it's the signature of the issuer, but you're saying you're doing an encryption instead. Did I understand correctly?
When you say the signature of the issuer, so I we may be talking about the same thing. What happens is when the issuer issues the credential, they are essentially encrypting that credential, with public private key encryption. And that public key that's used to encrypt that credential, is what's put on the chain. But it's essentially the signing act of the issuer, which is causing that to happen. But it is encrypted, right? And so that way, while I've got that, credential file in my mobile device, I can't go in and manipulate it in any way. Because if the only thing that happened was that when I received that credential, the name of the issuer came along with it, or the signature of the issuer came along with it, I could still go in and change it, right? And so it's the fusion of those two at the time of verification, when I then take that public verification key that matches the encrypted credential file. The marriage of those two, the fact that they still match, is what ensures me that nothing tampered with it along the way.
I see. I think we may be using the word encrypted differently. Okay. Usually in our community, encrypted means ciphered, meaning nobody can access it except the person who encrypted it, which I don't think is what you're saying, is it?
So when you say nobody can access it, you mean nobody can see the
plain text.
Plain text, yeah. So that is to a certain extent what we're saying, but it's not necessarily so. Maybe encryption is a common word and not exactly what you're intending, but it becomes encoded and there is a public key that matches that encoded file The encoded file itself is not in plain text. It is encoded. It sounds like you're familiar with the technical backside.
This group in general is fairly technical.
Okay, fine. So it's a JWT. It's a sort of a version of a JWT, that if you go to any JWT reader like JWT.io, you'd be able to drop it in there and be able to see what it contains, in clear text. Because it is encoded, if you change any of the bits, the public key that's on the chain won't match anymore, at the time of verification.
And
And Dimitri, you know, we have an outstanding date to put you together with Andres. Andres, unfortunately, is on Australian time, so making an 11 o'clock meeting was near impossible for him. He's on Sydney time, but we can absolutely, if anyone has additional questions, schedule another meeting maybe at a 5 o'clock time to even answer the deeper, even more technical questions.
Over to you, Phil.
I'm gonna cut in line, Phil. Sorry, one second. Because one thing we didn't really talk about yet is earner identity. How is identity defined? Does it come from the wallet? Like who defines the identity? And what are you using for identity?
I guess a question for me, Naomi.
More specific. I'm sorry. Yes, please.
No worries. At the moment, we're not doing identity binding. And there's not a concept of personal DIDs or anything like that. Essentially, we're using DID ION for the issuers, and we're using DID as well as for the inspectors, and different actors in the, organizational actors in the network, are all registered, have a DID, unique ID, that's associated to them. The, individuals and their wallets, are, identified as they claim their identity credentials in their wallet. So, as an example, right, when you download the wallet for the first time and you fire it up, the first thing it asks you to do or suggests you do is to claim a email account and claim a phone number. We also allow you to use a driver's license and claim social security number, driver's license ID, passport you can use to claim your passport number. And so you become the holder of those identity credentials. And then using those identity credentials, you can then go and claim other credentials.
Okay, thanks for that. All right, Phil, you have the floor now, please. Thanks.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
We can.
Okay, thank you. You made a brief side comment about using Ethereum. I was just wondering if you're using the Ethereum before with the same POW consensus, or have you moved over since they've implemented proof of stake?
So we're still using the proof
POW.
POW.
So you're using mainnet. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, great. Why don't we move on to that business model discussion? And we can always circle back to questions people have.
Absolutely. I think you're still seeing my screen. I'll make it a little bit bigger. One of the things that people ask about is not only the business model, but also like, hey, we've heard that, you know, there's a credit system, et cetera, to Velocity. And absolutely, I mentioned that Velocity started out originally thinking about the adoption problem. That's part of what drove the conversations with the HRIS tech providers. And that's also, you know, what drove, you know, some of the way the founding members were organized. But the other part of driving adoption is that they realized to get everyone to start to issue credentials, there would need to be some incentive to participate in this kind of system. And so the way Velocity is structured, contributors, anyone who contributes to the network, and this doesn't have to be a member. This can be any organization that issues credentials, and they can issue in their own worlds where they're currently issuing to other networks as well. And then once they issue to Velocity, they get credit, and the person accepts the credential. I will add that. Once that credential is accepted, they get credit for having issued that credential. And then they can hold those. And then when a verifier goes to verify a credential, not just to view a credential, but to verify the credential, they have to buy credits and use credits to make that verification happen. And so it creates an opportunity for this market exchange. And so it gives that opportunity for anyone who issues a credential to monetize and get a benefit, financial benefit out of issuing their credentials. And that's really important in the sense that we're asking a number of organizations to basically disrupt their current business models and think differently about them. And even on the verification side, the idea here is that the most static pieces of data about a person, like your education and employment record, like if I went to a certain school, I've always gone to that certain school. It's not something that changes day to day, like a criminal background where I could run out and rob a bank tomorrow and then my record changes. That information for background check providers is often hard to verify and slow, and it creates a lot of friction in their process. At the same time, it's static, so it doesn't have to be so slow. And it can be absolutely something that's issued as a credential and instantly verified and reduces a lot of the time and effort for getting people into jobs. And so that's really this idea here, is that we can incent more issuance of digital credentials, and then the background check providers are actually making changes to the way they think about their business models as well to be able to participate and kind of simplify the parts that they can simplify and use their expertise on some of the harder to solve things that are more transient in a person's record. And so just wanted to talk to the business model. I know that question came up, and did I speak to it sufficiently in terms of, hey, I heard verifiers have to pay. That's the way this system is set up.
Thanks, Naomi. I don't see anyone else in the queue right now, so
okay.
Keep going. Thank you.
And then in terms of the roles in Velocity Network, is there are several known roles. I think this is important to clarify. So we mentioned members and what members do. Members are on the board of directors and shape, you know, the practices of the network. They can be network stewards, which is they operate a node, or they can be advisory members. Where the action tends to happen that we think about is you've got your individual holding a wallet. And again, that could be any wallet. And then you've got people that want to issue credentials and folks that want to verify those credentials. And so Velocity splits out the role of the issuer, for example, from the credential agent operator, where I might be a school, say Naomi University, and I want to issue credentials, but maybe I'm a small school. I don't have a lot of funds. I don't have a big IT department. So I don't want to do that myself. I want to have a credential agent operator do that technical work for me to issue my credentials. And so in this model, both organizations kind of get credit and split the credit for having issued the credential to Velocity. And that's a really important role. And then here, notary issuers are like your background check providers that maybe verified my record. And those are highly regulated players. It's a highly regulated industry, and only an organization that is in that regulatory group can participate as a notary issuer. You know, say I, Naomi, worked for a company 10 years ago that then went out of business, but it was verified once that I did in fact work there. They can issue that credential on behalf of that organization. And so that's the role of the notary issuer. And then you see your linked open data players here and so forth. And so this kind of gives a little bit of the different roles in Velocity Network and what they do on the network. Any kind of questions in that space? Yeah.
Yeah. These may have come just before you got there. Sorry. So in the chat. So one's from Tim, and he wants to know if your employer partners are willing to pay for verification.
Yes, they are, because it's expected to be a lot cheaper than what they're currently paying.
And Sharon asks, I'm scrolling up here, what's the incentive for individuals to share their credentials?
That is whether they want to get opportunities, and that is in the space of the wallet itself in terms of when they And I guess I should pull back. So one of the things that Velocity is doing is we're starting to work on these closed loop ecosystems with large employers that with their HRIS systems and even partnerships with the institutions that are issuing certain credentials. For example, one of our clusters is the healthcare cluster where large hospital system is trying to hire, for example, nurses and so forth to create these closed loop ecosystems. And the incentive for sharing your credentials is that you can more quickly get processed and hired onto a new organization.
Very interesting. Thanks, Mary. Phil, P1, you're in the queue. You have the floor.
Sure. Thank you. When you're talking about these credential notaries, are they what's a little bit unclear to me is, are they signing in lieu of the institution themselves? Do they have, in some sense, the institution's or an institutional identifier of the former student, for example, that they're using, or how does that work?
Yeah, this is limited to background check providers at present. It's a very specific role. To answer your question in more detail, and it's, as far as I know, it's not necessarily on the institution side. It's only on the employment side. But Phil, I can get back to you with more information on that in the sense it's not my expertise per se.
Sure.
I know they have a very limited slice of a role, and actually we've had some requests recently to even rethink what notary issuer means to expand it, but to my knowledge, the foundation has not explored any expansion of that role yet.
And Nomi, just to add to your to add to your response as well. So the when the notary issuer signs credentials, it's with their own signature. It's not with the original issuing institution signature. So it's very clear that it's on behalf of, and it's not the actual. It doesn't have the same weight as the issuing institution itself. Signing it.
So it's not a multi-sig credential in that sense.
A multi-sig credential. What do you
mean? Meaning that there's multiple signatures on the credential.
There's a single signature on the credential and that's the notary. Yeah.
Got it.
And thank you, Moshi, for contributing that.
No problem.
So then, you know, in terms of like our secret sauce, what we get to in the end of all these pieces being put together is this public, open, fully decentralized network controlled and governed by participants. And right now it's 28 blockchain nodes run by 15 organizations, and periodically there's been a call for participation on, you know, for if additional members want to come in and run a node. So that's a, maybe I think it's twice yearly, there's a call for members to participate in that way. But that's the current status of the network. And the Velocity tech stack is fully available, royalty-free, open source. And as I showed you online, the documentation is, you know, fully accessible online. It's constantly under updating, you know, under revision and review. If you see anything that you think would be helpful to have in the documentation, please absolutely reach out to me. I know that even some of Carrie's questions started to probe to opportunities for us to expand the discussion further. Or if you find anything that is an error, you know, please do let us know. Of course, this is a lot of documentation to maintain, but the idea is to make everything as accurate and open as possible. I'll show you real quick a little bit of that. We're live. We're focused on adoption. These are some of our current updates. So we've got a cluster strategy, and we're starting with regulated credentials first. We're getting some of the largest employers to opt in, and this particularly is focused on a healthcare cluster, and there's also a banking cluster in the EU. And using the screening industry to focus as notaries where necessary, and that the largest job boards are serving as distribution channels to individuals. And so together, with the HR tech vendors serving as distribution channels to employers. So this is kind of like the operational strategy, although there are other clusters that are popping up and other types of issuers that are starting to get involved and start publishing to Velocity. And then this slide real quick just covers the website, which I showed you, and some of the documentation available. We do have all of our content from the New York City General Assembly from the summer posted online, and you can read and kind of see what different actors in Velocity have started doing with the utility layer of that Velocity provides. And then Moshe may be able to talk to this further. I do get questions about like, hey, well, what happens if you're not using the large systems, the HR tech providers, et cetera? Does this box out small businesses from participating and or small institutions from participating? And the answer is no, because if you're not using one of those platforms, you can still, you know, work with a different kind of issuer. We're starting to see more open types of opportunities for issuing credentials. And you can work with one of those partners to issue your credentials to Velocity. And from a receiving end, this web verification service will be live shortly and will enable for verification of the credentials on Velocity without direct verification through your HR tech provider while those systems and those integrations are still being developed. Moshe Tzvi, do you have anything you kind of want to add here? Because I know this is more your world.
Thanks. Thanks for offering. No, I think you did a fine job explaining it. Essentially, the way we think about this is allowing individuals offering individuals a service whereby their credential becomes hosted, and this is more of like a SaaS centralized model, where if the individual wants their credential hosted, so that anyone that they give the generated link to can go in and validate the credential, then, you know, this makes that available. And as Naomi pointed out, the reason that we're, you know, going down this path and as an additional component to our framework is that it then allows any organization, regardless of whether they have an ATS, regardless of whether their ATS is yet integrated with the Velocity network or not, to simply follow a link, come to a website, and click to verify the credentials if they want to.
Okay. Any other kind of questions coming up in the chat? I see it moving, and it's hard to decipher what is us talking and what is questions.
So again, I'm keeping an eye on it. The transcriber really fills up the chat these days. P1 is he's in the queue, so I'm going to give him the floor.
Sure. What about self-issued credentials? The VC model certainly supports an individual creating their own credential. Is that? I'm not sure how that fits into the description you described.
Yeah. So there certainly is the ability for an individual to go into the wallet and add credentials that self-reported credentials. As we call them, verifying self-reported credentials doesn't have a lot of meaning, right? Because you're not really going back to the source institution because it's just something that the individual created themselves. But there certainly it's supported by the network and it's part of the wallet framework. Even today, you can go in and do it. And by the way, anyone who wants to is more than welcome to go to the App Store or the Google Play Store and download our wallet and play around with it. There's no cost, it's free, and you can kind of see the functionality that's there.
Great, thanks. Keith, you have the floor.
Yeah, thank you for the great presentation. I mean, I think there's a lot of room for this type of product in the market. I guess my question is, I mean, a lot of the slides talk about it being kind of decentralized and open, but at the same time, I mean, if one considers the architecture where like everything needs to go through an SDK, you have the web services, which I'm just going to assume is all operated by Velocity Network. That would seem to be like a large centralizing function. Like everything needs to go through Velocity. And maybe I'm missing something here. Like how do you adhere to the principles of decentralization yet maybe have so much centralization?
So things don't need to go through Velocity. The wallet and the SDK is there as a basis. It's as I mentioned before, it's open source, and we would love nothing more than for there to be several other wallet providers implementing the protocols, and we can retire our wallet. Right? We don't want to be in the wallet business. We just created one now because. Like just so there's an example out there for people to have and there's something functional. But it's not at all. And even then it's not going through our servers or anything like that, right? All the communication that takes place is peer to peer, right? So when an issuing institution issues credentials, they're issuing it directly to the wallet that an individual is holding. And then that individual is sharing it directly with, an inspecting institution. And Velocity is not any part of those communication channels. So, maybe the mental model is a little different than what you had in mind, but, it is, legitimately decentralized. Things are not coming through us. We don't have access to the, credentials that are being shared or anything like that.
Xander,
did that help clarify and kind of give you the perspective? Yeah. Okay. Good.
Xander, you have the floor.
Thank you so much. I just had a couple of quick kind of rapid fire questions around the mobile wallet in particular. I had pulled up the example wallets on GitHub and I read the documentation real quick. It doesn't really seem clear. How exactly are you doing the wallet implementation? Like, are you using Ursa or did you do your own? Like, what's underneath for storage there?
Oh, so that's deeper than me.
Okay. All right. So then maybe I can bounce up one level higher.
I'm happy to get you on a call with our mobile team lead, but I honestly don't know what the wallet is internally using as its storage model.
No worries. I checked the dependencies. I thought I might find it there, but I can be fine. So the next question is, I don't think this has been mentioned. I apologize if I missed it, but like what protocol is being used specifically to communicate between issuers and wallets and verifiers? Is it all an HTTP API or are you using some kind of other medium for transmitting these communications?
I believe it is HTTP.
That's what it looked like to me. I kind of wanted your clarification there. My final
HTTPS,
question.
Yes, I should say it's HTTPS, but, I'm pretty sure it is. If that's important, I'm happy to, we can get back to you with,
It might be.
Yeah. I just put my email in the chat. So if you have any questions that we can't answer on this call, like I said, Andres really knows all the weeds and he's not available today at this time. So, we'd be happy to set up a call to really dig deeper with anyone on this group who has the deeper questions on how things work.
Well, I hope my last question is not too technical, but I mean, we'll see. So if you're using HTTP APIs, which it looks like you are, how are you handling, authentication between parties? And I'm kind of interested in this in two ways, like if I'm going to issue a credential to a wallet, how do I verify, that the wallet holder is who I think they are and vice versa? How is the identity of the issuer or the verifier like established if all these communications are HTTP? Is it just like various flavors of OAuth?
So that's a good question. So actually it's a layer above that, right? You're thinking sort of on the technical protocol side, but actually the answer to your question as far as how do I know that the person is who they say they are, is because of the identity credentials that they own in their wallet.
Oh no. So like what I mean more specifically is like, let's say you wanted to issue something to me. Are you issuing it by like my email? Like I know that, that I'm your employee. I have this particular email identity already. Like how do I reach out to this particular wallet to offer them a credential? Is it like, you see what I'm saying? Like how is that wallet addressed?
So I think there's two layers to your question. I'll try to address both of them. And if I still missed it, then let me know and we'll recalibrate. So the first is, how am I as an employer, an issuer, how do I determine, you know, that this person actually is who they say they are, and therefore they're the right person for me to be giving the credential to. And so that's what I was speaking to earlier, which is and this was designed to map current business processes, right? So imagine right now if a graduate of university calls up the registrar's office and says they need a copy of their transcript. So what is that registrar's office currently requiring in order to, you know, validate that that person is who they say they are and therefore provide them that information? And it's different, right? It depends on each institution decides for itself, right, what information it's going to require in order to make that happen. And so too, the same thing is here, right? When you are an issuer, you decide what disclosures you require in order to issue. It could be that if it's, the credential that you're issuing is simply a participation, you know, that badge that, hey, we were all in this 1 hour session together, then, you know, maybe it's good enough that I just, you know, that we match on an email address. But if I'm giving somebody their medical license, right, I probably want four different pieces of information and a copy of their driver's license and, you know, who knows what. And so, you define when you're an issuer you define the protocols, the disclosures, that you're going to require in order to determine that this is a person. It's in your hands to make that decision. It usually just gonna map whatever your current business process is for a non-digital credential that you're issuing. You would just translate that over to the digital side. The second piece of your question is, okay, that's great, but how do I make that connection, right? How do I let the individual know that I may have a credential for them? And so to facilitate that, we generate either a link or a QR code that you can send via email or whatever method, you know, whatever methodology you want to the individual's email is what we most commonly see, where people just will drop those QR codes in a mail merge to email them. And then someone will receive an email saying, hey, you've got a credential, that digital credential you can claim. You can claim your diploma now. And then when they scan that QR code, it'll open up in our app the ability to then create the peer-to-peer connection with the issuing institution, provide the information that's required, and get the credential.
Gotcha. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Thank you. I'm sorry, we have gone over time here, so we have to call this.
I actually, Carrie, I was right with you. I know we're out of time. This is our final slide, and I've shared the deck in the chat. I've also given my email in the chat if anyone has any questions that we were not able to answer today. Carrie, is there anything else you want us to do before we wrap up?
Nope. No, that is great. We will publish these minutes and, folks, these will show up in the mailing list. Feel free to reach out to Naomi, like she said. Thank you very much for coming here today, telling us about Velocity. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Have a good week, everybody. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.